Support for this day in esoteric political history comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, May 23rd, 1944, a fracture in the Texas Democratic Legislature. For the first time in their recent history, Texas had two rival Democratic conventions. The main cause of the rift was whether to support FDR and his more progressive New Deal policies. All of this, of course, in the run-up to that fall's 1944 presidential election, where FDR was running for re-election. One faction of the Democratic Party called for, quote, the restoration of states' rights which have been destroyed by the communist New Deal, end quote, and then went on to call for the, quote, restoration of the supremacy of the white race. So there you have the states' rights dog whistle, followed very quickly by, you know what, we're just going to say the quiet part out loud, we want white supremacy. So here to discuss that split within the Democratic Party and the ways in which state parties can be roiled over whether or not to support a controversial president, which sounds very familiar these days, are Nicole Hammer of Columbia and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
And we should say this moment kind of plants the seeds for the way in which the Democratic Party would split and transform into the 1950s. But Nikki, let's start in 1944 itself. Both paint the picture of what it means to be a Democrat in 1944 and why FDR is emerging as a controversial figure within his own party.
Well, this kind of goes to the whole point of what we're talking about today, but to be a Democrat in 1944 meant a lot of different things, especially depending on what part of the country you were in. If you were in the North, it might mean that you were an industrial worker. It might mean that you were African American. If you were in the South, it meant that you were white and that you were part of essentially one party rule across the South. That this white supremacist rule that you're talking about had been something that was in place and dominated by the Democratic Party for decades at this point. And why is FDR controversial? Well, he did a lot of stuff, really leaned into the power of government, particularly the power of government to intervene in the economy, including industries like oil and gas. And there were some very upset Texans over that intervention in the oil and gas industry. And they had been organizing against FDR for a while because they were conservative and he was liberal and they didn't like him. And so they had been trying to leverage his third and fourth presidential runs against him.
Mm. I also think it's interesting how much, you know, in America, you just can't separate race and politics. Like, they just go hand in hand and really fuel one another. And I think there's so much political response or even political backlash to any kind of black progressive agenda, even if that agenda is actually not that progressive. But if it extends or protects rights, you can almost always expect some sort of backlash. And I think that's what a lot of FDR was experiencing in his attempts to, you know, create this new deal that helped everyone. Southern Democrats push back on that incredibly hard, especially when it comes to black labor.
Yeah, so it seems like there's two, well, there's a lot of things going on here, but two of the things that are going on here are certainly, I think, Nikki, to your point of, in Texas in particular, there are particular industries that are being targeted by New Deal policies, and so that's where that language of he's a communist comes from. I get it, even within your own party, you know, that's going to happen. But then, as you were saying, it gets wrapped up into larger questions and fears about an extension of rights and economic justice and so forth. I'll ask a question about 1944 that I feel like is worth asking now, which is like, if you're unhappy with your own party and you're roiling about the future of your party, why not go to the other party? Like, was there a conversation here about what it means to be a Democrat? Why wouldn't some Democrats become Republicans if you're sitting there saying FDR is a communist and he's a race traitor? Can you just jump ship?
I mean, that ultimately is what happens, spoiler alert, for the next few decades. But there is functionally no Republican Party in the South. And the Republican Party that there is populated by Black and brown people. And so white Southerners are not interested in the Republican Party, and there wouldn't be an infrastructure for them if it was there. Now, Dwight Eisenhower, once he becomes president in the next decade, is going to try to revitalize the Republican Party in the South explicitly to catch these, we'll call them disaffected Democrats, but these white Democrats who are very concerned about the party's turn towards civil rights. But at the time, you just don't really have the option because it's a one-party state.
And Texas isn't alone. There are a lot of Southern states that are that only have a Democratic. Yeah. It's the Democratic way or the Democratic way. There is no other alternative.
Kelly, what do you make of this language that's in there? This language feels like such a bridge between the states' rights dog whistle and the sort of explicit white supremacy language. You know, I think, to put it roughly, over the course of the 40s and into the 50s and 60s, people probably stopped saying out loud, "We want restoration of the supremacy of the white race," and would instead either evoke states' rights or defend segregation without sort of then going that next step and explicitly saying. But, you know, it's 1944, a time when there's just explicit racist language is still sort of accepted within a political convention.
Yeah, and I also think that anytime Black people are awarded even small things, it sets off a firestorm. And so you don't even have to say like white only or white this, but if you're promoting Black equality, and Black is used, especially when we think of, you know, the Supreme Court case that was struck down that basically said you could not bar Blacks from a Democratic primary, that alone was enough to like set people off and say, okay, no, we're going to have to develop something completely different to combat this, because they didn't think they would have, you know, the ability to do it through FDR for sure. But yeah, I think that, you know, that language continues and then morphs, and then it's still there. The dog whistles are still there, but the 1940s and even 50s become much more explicit.
I want to pick up on what Kelly is saying about that Supreme Court case, because it's important to know that the Democratic Party in Texas was explicitly white. They barred Black and Latino voters from participating. And this had gone to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court says initially, like, strikes down the law because the state had made the law. And then when the Democratic Party is the one that bans Black and Latino people from joining, then the Supreme Court says, okay, well, you can do that because it's not the state making the law, it's the party making the rules. And that difference allowed for essentially a whites-only Democratic Party for some time. Until 1944, actually.
So coming back to this split convention in the spring of 1944, everyone was looking ahead to the election in that fall. What is, as we can tell, the scheme here? There's obviously a big ideological split, but what are these now two Democratic parties trying to actually pull off?
All right, so this is a little complicated, but I'm going to break it down. So you have two factions in the Democratic Party, the pro-FDR faction, who call themselves the Loyalists, and the anti-FDR faction that call themselves the Regulars. And the Regulars, who actually dominate the Texas Democratic Party at this state, their plan is to send electors for the Electoral College without any commitments. So they don't have to vote for FDR. So even if FDR wins the state of Texas, the electors for Texas aren't going to vote for him. They're going to vote for someone else. And the reason they're going to do that is they want to keep FDR from hitting the necessary amount of electoral votes to win. And that throws the election into the House of Representatives. And in the House of Representatives, who dominates? Southerners. So it's a very convoluted scheme to get white Southerners the ability to choose their own president who is not FDR.
It's a convoluted scheme, but it comes down to, we don't like the way this election is playing out. Maybe the House of Representatives, maybe we can set it up so the House of Representatives comes in and makes it happen for us. That sounds pretty resonant.
It's it's pretty shady, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of successful in that they are able to really undermine in some ways, you know, FDR's plans. But, you know, even though he still wins the presidency, they have sent a strong message. And I think that's what's most important, or that's the success. But the Texas Regulars, without a candidate, gain over 140,000 votes. And that's not nothing, right? Like, those numbers are pretty significant in letting FDR know, we don't approve of your message.
And the thing is, you know, FDR actually dies less than a year after the election. And so anti-FDR, pro-FDR doesn't really matter. But the people who had led the Texas Regulars, they are going to be the very same people who formed the Dixiecrats in 1948. And this is a Southern faction that splits away from the Democratic Party, runs their own slate of candidates in 1948. And this really does presage what's going to happen in the Democratic Party, which is all those white Southerners. It's going to take them a while. 1964 is going to be a big inflection point, but they're breaking away. The Democratic Party is splitting in two.
Mm-hmm. And these are the same people that want Strom Thurmond to be their president. Mm-hmm. So that also should tell us something about who we think they feel is in their best interest.
What states' rights really mean.
Yeah.
It means Strom Thurmond.
Yeah. And, you know, I just think this is such an important point that you can look at a particular scheme and think of it as harebrained, or think of like something as chaotic and be like, what's your end game here? But you also at the same time need to look at what are the seeds that are being planted that in not that long, you know, a generation are going to then turn into something. And this feels, again, I mean, I keep saying this feels resonant, but this does. And I just think a lot of what we're going through now, particularly on the Republican within the Republican Party, feels very, very similar in that way.
Which is really important, Jody, because, you know, this idea of having it thrown to the House of Representatives, it's something that the conservative movement, the national conservative movement in the 1950s and 1960s is playing around with. And in 1964, when Barry Goldwater runs, they lose in a massive landslide. But 16 years later, Ronald Reagan wins the presidency. And so these minoritarian politics and these minoritarian schemes to thwart Democratic elections, they matter, even if they're not able to secure power, because they're seeding the ground for something that can sprout within, like you were saying, less than a generation.
Mm-hmm. But I would also add that, you know, the converse side is that while these groups are forming what will be sort of the Dixiecrats or a new political party, and then shifting, you know, their politics eventually to the Republican Party, Black people are doing the opposite, in which they're switching their allegiances to the Democratic Party in ways that, you know, they haven't done or has not been done, because Black people were Republicans. I mean, Lincoln was a Republican president. So to the idea of Black people being Democrats was, you know, would have been seen as absurd not much longer before this.
Yeah, and as Leah Regur said when she was on the show, 1936 was the first election when the majority of the Black vote went to the Democrats. And that's, of course, FDR's second election. So these things, as you were saying earlier, Jody, are pretty tightly bound together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think that's a really good point, Kelly, is that obviously you don't just look at the faction that is trying to break away, gets all the attention, but thinking about what's left behind and who else is, you know, going to be welcomed into a new party is huge, including, as you were saying, you know, tons of Black voters, but also this is where LBJ kind of gets his start. Yeah. And you see a sort of real Texas progressive ethos emerge from this as well. Mm-hmm. So, yes. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Nicole Hemmer, thanks as always.
Thanks, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. You can get in touch with us with any questions or comments or ideas for the show. Email us thisdaypod@gmail.com, or you can find a form at thisdaypod.com. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.